Okay, we are plugged in and ready to go.
Yes.
Well, it's Sunday, the 28th of August here. I've got Bernard Gunther on with me, all the way from the US. Bernard, great to have you plugged in with me today. Welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Well, our listeners can get this podcast over at iTunes, doing well over there, and also go to my website, thecrazfiles.com, C-R-A-Z-Z. There's just so much going up there and a ton of podcasts for people to have a look at, and videos and news links and everything going up. And we're also over at Facebook under The Kraz Files. You can check that out. I have another website called Open Source Truth as well, with a lot of medical-related articles going up there in regards to GMOs and geoengineering and just medical issues. Dr. Rima is, of course, a doctor, and Ralph Usitola is a health freedom fighting lawyer, and they put out some really good stuff, and I help over there as well. But we have a great show today, Bernard, because I've done a few of these shows lately with other folks, and did a show with Anthony Peake as well, which was great, and discussing all these issues that are happening in the world. And your website is great. It's called Piercing the Veil of Reality, and a really, really good website. I've been getting into this a little bit, and found a few of your YouTube videos to go through, and I'm going to put your links up as well, of course, today with this podcast to accompany it. And so people can go on there, and you're also over at Facebook and social media and stuff, which is good. But I really enjoy your work. But why don't we just get to know you a little bit about you, because you're originally from Germany. Tell us a little bit about that, because I know you grew up in the US. And talk about yourself a tad here, and then we'll kind of just melt into the conversation a little bit more.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, I was actually born in Los Angeles. My parents are from Germany, but they used to live here in the late 60s, early 70s. My dad made his PhD at UCLA. That's why they were living here. He studied at the university. And I was born here, but when I was 1 year old, my parents moved back to Germany, to Munich. And that's where I grew up. And Munich, Germany, yeah. Lovely city. I love it. Still my favorite city in Germany. And when I was 20 years old, I was in the University of Munich studying business, and, you know, became very disillusioned with all of it, because I didn't know why I was doing it, and I was still miserable in the educational system. But I had a passion for playing the drums. So at the age of 22, then I quit university and moved to Los Angeles to go to music school, to the Musicians Institute, to study drums and percussion. And that's what I really did for 10 years. I was literally obsessed with drums. I practiced 4 to 6 hours a day, played in bands, had my own band, recorded an album, toured. And
it's a spiritual thing, isn't it? The drums.
Exactly.
It connects humans with that spiritual beat, you know?
Absolutely. Mm. You know, I mean, naivety as a young 20-something-year-old, I just wanted to do the rock and roll thing and get signed. But, you know, drumming really helped me it became a spiritual practice to really express myself and cleanse myself from just, you know, especially emotionally and stuff that came up I couldn't process in any other way. And, you know, I also became disillusioned with the whole music scene and all of that, because I was just wanted to make art and music and not, you know, get into the whole business thing, which is a whole other story. And so in that process, as I was, you know, my own shadow came out, and I was just questioning the world more and more in the society we live in, because I couldn't really fit in. And, you know, so in that journey, so to speak, then I started to come across certain spiritual teachings, books and writings. So I was diving deeper into just basic spirituality and philosophy with Alan Watts, Krishnamurti, and so on. And then I got deeper and deeper into more conspiracy stuff and alien stuff, UFO stuff, and it really blew up my mind really open. I also got into some New Age stuff, because at the beginning I was just really taking everything in and was not very discerning. And over the years, I found another talent I had, and that's led me to the healing arts, in particular body work and the healing arts like yoga and qigong. And I,
that's going to be prohibited here soon,
Boomer. I guess so, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that really turned my life around. And when my band broke up, I just pursued body work, moved outside of Los Angeles into a place called Topanga Canyon, out in nature. And I've been living here for 10 years. And I've had my body work practice for the, you know, around the same time, same length of time. And then, you know, maybe also 12, 13 or 15 years ago, I started writing, you know, just, you know, with my own personal experiences or the research and stuff I've come across. Even back then, I was sharing it on MySpace. I don't know if you guys were familiar with that in Australia.
Yeah.
Before there was Facebook, right? So I was just writing just to, like, it helped me to understand things. I was mostly writing for myself, but then also in the hopes to connect with others who are interested in a similar topics, right? Because when you kind of start to question the world as we know it, it can become a lonely path, right? And you can't really relate to many people anymore.
You lose a lot of friends.
Exactly. That's also the other side effect.
You work out who your real friends are, you know, as you start to sort of wake up. Yeah.
Yeah. And that in that process, then one of my friends said, "Hey, why don't you, you know, create your own blog?" And I'm like, okay, I make my own blog. And that was the beginning of veilofreality.com. And again, I never really had any ambition to become a writer or, like, you know, do actually the work I'm doing now. I was just really just sharing my findings, my research, my own process as I was going along. And then over the years, I just, you know, more and more people followed my writings. And then Facebook came in. And then one of my friends suggested to make some videos about my writings. And that was 5 years ago. And we made three films, Know Thyself, UFOs, Aliens, and the Question of Contact, and Love, Reality, and the Time of Transition. And yeah, since then, I feel more and more people have became more open to these topics I've been writing about. And I really take more holistic approach. Like, I don't really focus just on one thing, but I literally have been writing about everything from just politics to conspiracy stuff to spiritual stuff, body mind practices, to also the hyperdimensional and the fringe UFOs, aliens, you know. But, you know, on the deeper level, I have also then more focus definitely onto the hyperdimensional matrix, the hidden forces of life, right, which I feel a lot of people are not that aware of. And I've been writing about this and researching that for many, many years. And back then, hardly anybody took that topic serious, let alone take me serious about it. But I've definitely seen and felt over the past few years that more and more people have woken up to that deeper level of reality and the matrix manipulation. And I see seen this in my interaction with others, that they are more sincerely interested in these topics and can see that how this operates in the world. So, but again, I really never had an ambition or a plan to do this, you know, to that extent. And then people ask me to do interviews and webinars and all of that. And I just really take it a day at a time and just go with the flow, really, you know?
Yeah, of course. And what you're doing is not New Age, you know, a lot of the New Age movement. I tried to get is it Michael McGowan? He wrote the Laurel Canyon book on the hippie dream, the dark side of the hippie dream, and how all the music was psyop in the 1960s. It goes so far back, and the drug revolution and everything, you know, the whole, a lot of the so-called spiritual movement or New Age movement has been hijacked as well, you know, by people who have good hearts and their intentions in the right place. But of course, they do that with everything, you know.
Absolutely.
They seem to know how we think. But looking at your work, looking at your work on piercing the veil of reality and your writings, you know, there's just certain information in this life that you come across that acts, you know, like a trigger, has a triggering effect, like a key opening an old door, you know, inside, and that information ricochets and gets you at a certain level, and that's what happened when I was reading your writings, because I was reading some of my own personal material, just for example, back in the 90s, you know, around 93, 94, and then I read some of your articles, and it's the same type of material again that I've just constantly been running into over all these years. This is a very different type of material that you're putting out there, and I think it's a type of stuff that's a part of who we really are in a spiritual matter. I think, as I said, it's that whole. Of course, if humans are meant to be naturally in touch with nature and their spiritual side, you know, because we just don't see so much. It is true that whole. False reality has been pulled over our eyes, you know, to blind us from what's really going on. And I think, of course, when people, I notice as people start to wake up and ask questions outside the box, then these hidden hands need to keep manipulating things to keep steering their attention away, you know, to keep them always looking and focused on another direction instead of themselves. So I think your information is helping sort of, as you say, pierce that veil and pierce straight through and cut through and give people more tools here. Because I think, you know, you read this sort of information and I've always felt like, hey, I already know this stuff. Maybe it's just that I've forgotten. And reading it is having that triggering effect. Because deep down there, lifetime after lifetime, I already know this. It's just like the layers of an onion, isn't it? And it's buried down in there. And you know, you get born and you get born into this matrix system and you spend your life working and watching TV and everything and it just gets lost, but it doesn't mean that it's gone. It's in there. And you just need to... And I think what you said before, you know, you do lose a lot of friends, but then you gain a lot of people in your life that are also interested in this information, and they get attracted to you. You meet new people, and those other people go away, and that's just their experience in this life, isn't it?
Absolutely, I absolutely agree. And you know, like you know. Big part of my work is also the self-work process. You know, I really want to empower people and give people tools. I mean, that's what I do. I've been doing for a living, or that's my main work as a body worker or coach. I help people, you know, give them guidance on some level, but not, I don't like to really take on that guru kind of teacher role. It's like I want to empower people to step into their own power, their own guidance system, right? To get away from this whole authority worship or following anyone, right? And I also feel what you alluded to in what you said, what I feel separates my work from a lot of other work in the so-called truth movement. I don't really like that word anyway, truth movement, because I don't feel there's a movement per se, because for me, it's all about the individual. And what, you know, for me early on, because I come from the healing arts angle, like I have been practicing yoga for 20 years and embodiment practices for the same time, Qigong for 10 years, and also deep esoteric and spiritual work, a lot of psychology, especially Jungian psychology, shadow work and all of that. And I feel this is very, very necessary. And what I see out there today, especially in the information boom of the internet, you know, there's a lot of external focus on just information, intellectual information, right? And the news conspiracies and this and that. And obviously, yes, that's important as well to shine light into that, to bring the dark up and expose certain issues in the world and the matrix control system and all of that. But the intellectual information is not enough. It's, you know, I feel sometimes so-called truthers, quote-unquote, or people who are interested in seeking truth, in this day and age, sometimes I feel forget what the whole point is in this time we're in. It's really to becoming the change, right? To embody the higher frequencies and really wake up on a deeper level in levels of being our own, you know, in terms of our self-work process to raise our frequency and anchor these higher frequencies. And that cannot happen through intellectually gaining information or just spreading information. And this also relates to what you just said. You know, I can totally relate to that. A lot of the information I've come across, it was more like a trigger effect of remembering rather than learning something new on a deeper, deeper level. And I feel many of us from a metaphysical perspective have actually incarnated in this day and age to be part in this process, to, you know, remember and then in the same time help others wake up to be of service. And it's all based on an our individual role, because everybody has different lessons to learn and everybody has different talents, you know.
You mean reincarnate with intent?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that's definitely like, you know, I cannot prove that at any level, like scientifically, whatever. But I can, you know, see that happening, and certain material has resonated with me that has been talking about that.
It seems right? That so many of the masses, and doesn't mean that any of us are, there's no ego in any of this. I think that just people are on different levels, as you just said. I think a lot of people who do bad deeds, for example, in this life, and don't try and reconnect with that one light, that source that's in themselves, you know, they keep reincarnating, it seems. Anthony Peake talks about that with the deja vu, and that you could be living the same life like Groundhog Day over and over and over until you start to see the signs, and you get these signs all through your life. They're all always there, but I think people just get lost in that fear mechanism life after life, and they just don't see it. And it does seem like they're being born into life and death over and over again without kind of reconnecting. And I think just for some of those people, you know, that's just where they are in this life. But it's interesting you said that, because it does seem there's so many people here now that chose to come back almost in our conscious level, which is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing, what you just said, to keep in mind, what a lot of people don't understand, because sometimes I feel that people use the word we as a collective or humanity too loosely, too generalized. Because I even, out of my own experience as a body worker and holistic coach, having worked with people one-on-one, with thousands of people literally over 10 years, I see how everybody's so different, right? In terms of what they need to learn, what they need to work on, or where they're at, even from a soul level perspective.
Different levels. Right? Mm.
Different levels. Mm. And you even look collectively, there are 7 billion people with vast different levels of being and lessons we need to learn. And you cannot just lump them all together and generalize it. You know, I don't see any form of collective awakening happening anytime soon. That's what I've been writing about a lot. And there's no judgment around it, as you said as well, you know, because there's so much happening on a multidimensional level, right? In terms of what an individual is going through, be it their soul evolution, karmic lessons, and then be it with hyperdimensional interference or of lifetimes and lifetimes what they've gone through, and so much which the mind cannot possibly grasp. Right. So that's needs to be taken in mind. And that's, I feel, again, the whole esoteric aspect, this esoteric self work, the deeper self work is very, very important, because like you said, with regards to the Groundhog Day, I've experienced that in my life, with seed with others. And I feel from a deeper esoteric soul evolutionary perspective, we don't get to move on until we have learned certain lessons. You know,
seems that way,
right? And then sometimes we are being presented with the same lessons, the same situations in different disguises, maybe in terms of 3D manifestation, but we really don't get to move on in terms of soul evolution or accessing high states of consciousness until we have learned a certain lesson and then take another step on the spiral out, so to speak, right? So again, it's just so multifaceted, this whole the times we are in. And that's why, like, I try the best I can to make it a holistic approach, right? To really take everything into consideration, and the internal work of self-work, embodiment, soul integration. You know, I mean, the whole idea of free will is also an illusion. Most people do not have free will. I mean, if you look into ancient esoteric teaching, they've talked about the same thing. It's almost you need to earn free will, or as Gurdjieff and other mystics have talked about, you need to grow your soul so it becomes truly individualized. So Sri Aurobindo's work of integral yoga, which I've gotten into lately a lot, confirms that as well, that it is, you know, it's about aligning your little ego illusory will with divine will, with the higher will, because there is something bigger happening than what we think we want in our personality identified selves, right?
That's
right. With our little ego desires and this and that. And I can relate in my own life. You know, what I thought I wanted back in those in my younger days hasn't happened. And I'm glad it didn't happen, right? Because there's something else at work here, which has guiding me and pushing me and you know, leading me to the life I'm living right now. And as I've said before, and I told many others, if you'd have told me like 10 or something years ago, you know, shared with me the life I'm leading now, I would have laughed into your face, right? I would have never expected that. And it kind of ties into the saying, tell God your plans and he will laugh at you, right? Because also, as long as we really haven't done any sincere self-work and cut through our social and cultural conditioning and programming, most of the desires, goals, and dreams we have are, you know, programs that are, do not reflect who we truly are, right? So it's really piercing through these programs and aligning us with higher energies, because in the end, we are that body, that ego consciousness is a vessel for higher energies to work through. Right, to become an instrument for the divine. And but as long as you haven't really anchored these higher frequencies in your embodiment process and cleared out your stuff, you cannot really anchor these higher frequencies. But humanities and us to varying degrees are always influenced by these higher energies, and that ties into the hyperdimensional matrix, right? As long as you really haven't worked through your matrix programming and not engaged in any sincere self, you can also easily become subjected to hyperdimensional forces, the hidden forces, the quote-unquote negative entities that also manipulate humanity and ourselves for their own agenda, right? To keep us in ego consciousness, to keep us locked in five sensory perception, to keep us locked in survival mode, and all of that, and separate consciousness, you know, and create actually a lot of suffering and struggle through us and through others in order to keep us locked in the frequency press. And I feel that's kind of the deeper quote-unquote secret or the topic of all topics, as Don Juan talked about in Castaneda's
work. Yes, yes,
right?
Yeah.
That we are actually being farmed for soul energy, that we are food for higher density negative entities, mm-hmm. right? And food doesn't necessarily mean physical food, but consciousness is food.
Consciousness,
right?
Yeah.
And but you know, they're also opposite forces, the divine and it's like a spiritual battle on the non-physical realm, and that battle is working through us. So but it's really understanding about ego again, like, is such an overused word, and people talk about destroying the ego and all of that, but no, you need to refine the ego, right? Without ego we couldn't exist in this 3D world. It is but it needs to become an instrument for divine will, for higher will, to use it as a tool, as an instrument, but not making it its master, right? And and that process, again, is very, very different for each of us. But I feel that's, in the end, the whole quote-unquote meaning of life. And I want to claim that I know the meaning of life, but in a sense, it's about soul evolution, to find our way back home, so to speak, right? To help in this process and anchoring higher frequencies. And that has profound effects on reality, right? Embodying these frequencies and really raising our vibration to a higher level. And that really has profound effects on the external world, as opposed to the new age ideas of reality creation with all of this visualization, thinking positive thoughts, you know, affirmations and whatnot. All of that is really useless if you haven't really done the work within yourself and really, like I mentioned before, cleared yourself from any matrix cultural programming and really become a more vessel for the divine and then respond to life that, rather than being reactive, you know?
Yeah, that lashing out, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I was reading in your article, which you're pretty much going over now, the timeline, reality split, frequency, vibration, and the hidden forces of life. There was mm-hmm. a section in there where you talk about that mechanism that you have, that you act out when you get confronted or you feel angry. Like in a car, for example, you're driving mm-hmm. and it's traffic and you lash out in the car and yell and, you know, right. And that anger sort of thing that's so frequent now. I notice a lot of people, I bring up driving, you know, and you go out and you drive in a city environment in a car, there's so many people are so angry, screaming in these cars, you know.
I know, you tell me, I live in LA, it's
yeah.
cars.
I just can't believe it, just seeing people all over the place now really snapping for little things, you know, and of course this feeds these negative forces. You know, when you're like that, if you're going to wake up and, you know, I'm a strong believer of that. If you're going to wake up in a negative state every day, thinking negatively, and being nasty to people around you and all this, then that's the exact life that you're going to get. And I think that's what is meant by how you can change the world with your mind. Just by the shifting how you think has so much of a profound impact as well. Just the way that you see things around you when you start to see things differently. And if you do react like that in the car, you do get that other, I get that other voice that says, no, it's just, right. Don't do that. It's wrong. No one can hear you. It's ridiculous. you look like a crazy person in this little metal bubble, you know.
And also considering that, whatever you would in your road rage, whatever you'd scream at the other driver, I was considering, is that something you would tell him or her in person,
exactly,
in their face?
To their face.
Or same on the internet with all the anonymous people hiding behind
trolls,
screen names. Is that what, would they tell me in person when the attacks I get,
No.
So all of that. But also I want to address some of your thoughts. Yes, it's watching our thoughts, but in light of the hyperdimensional topic, a lot of these thoughts we have are not even our own thoughts, but thought injections.
Yes.
So sometimes it's not just about changing thoughts, but even rejecting the thought. I'm like, okay, this is not me, and really Sri Aurobindo writes a great deal about it, to develop that yogic consciousness, as he calls it, the higher level of being, to differentiate it, external suggestions from who we truly are within, right? So that's a big thing, and I work with many people on that as well, and in my own process, to really identify what thought is really mine and what is not, right? Because most people are identified with their thoughts. And then you also don't want to fall into the trap of the new age of just like think positive thoughts, while all along you just suppress the shadow, right? Negative stuff, which you judge as negative, but needs to be processed without projection. And for example, anger. There's, definitely an unhealthy aspect to projecting anger, reactive and onto others and whatnot, but there's also a healthy expression of anger. And in the new age, it has been really judged, ironically, as negative. But anger has its place. When your boundaries are violated, when you stand up for justice, there's righteous anger, and it's a force that also we need to develop, almost the divine masculine, the warrior spirit, right? To stand up for something and really sometimes necessarily needing to confront somebody on that, like with fiery compassion, as Ken Wilber talks about, not just sweet light talk and just make nice, especially when we're dealing with forces, pathological individuals or forces working through other people. I learned the hard way that you need to make clear boundaries and say no. In my own process, my biggest lesson in life has been making boundaries. Because I was always like, yes, yes, and help this and that and give the benefit of a doubt and even feeling guilty when I would say no and all of that. So I had learned the hard way to really make a stand and say no, even when I was dealing with my own entity interference and attachments. You cannot, like Castaneda said or Don Juan said, you cannot fight these entities or the predator with niceness. You need to make a stand. And that's actually where the energy of righteous anger come into place. And really develop that warrior spirit to hold your ground and be as direct and call a spade and just really, hold your ground. So, that's just a little bit about the difference between projected reactive anger or anger that is actually coming from a more grounded, even spiritual self as energy to really make that boundary.
Let me ask you a little bit about the paranormal interference, because this is something that has been interfered with as well. So people think it's so many different things. The David Icke theory of the reptilians. There's the grey aliens. There's just so many different things. There's the tall Nordic alien beings. There's many, many research if you go throughout history. Even in Australia, there's some incredible research of ancient Aboriginal tribes here. saying that their ancestors are from the stars directly. That's what Dreamtime is. There's paintings on caves which clearly show some type of interference from the stars. You know, so there's so much going on, but I do believe that most of the UFO movement has been hijacked. That was in a film called Mirage Men, with these deep CIA agents who were just manipulating the entire movement, wanting people to believe in grey aliens, maybe, I don't know. So they're, again, their ideas and their attention is steered elsewhere. In the 1970s in Australia, in Pine Gap, which is a secret place where they experiment a lot of things, we don't actually know what's going on there. And there's a lot of these places in the US and around the world. There's stories of UFOs back to the 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, even in the Second World War, of these crafts. And I think right through to now, people think that they're seeing flying saucers from space when they're government crafts. So the governments themselves are obviously experimenting with technology and prefer the populations to be thinking that way. But behind the mask of that, there's definitely an interference. There's something that they are hiding. So your information kind of links up with this. Is this a internet interdimensional? You call it a hyperdimensional? Is this a parasitic in nature type force that we're dealing with here? Because I've said this on many podcasts. I had direct dealings of this growing up. I don't know why, but I had a terrible, just horrific, what they call night terrors, even from, you know, very, very young age, right through my teenage years and 20s. Absolutely horrific. And seeing these shadow beings in my room all the time, I don't want to go into too much. I've said it on other shows, but terrible, horrible experiences, which may have been because I was watching horror movies and things like that and thinking like that. You know, I grew up always obsessed with werewolves and vampires, as kids do, you know. Because you said at the start, you know, your experience growing up as a kid, for me, I had the same thing. I just hated school. I was so uncomfortable there. You'd never seen a child more uncomfortable in school than I was. I got expelled from school in year 8 of high school. That's how bad it was. Yeah, principal called my father and said, please get him out of here. Because I was lashing out in a violent way sometimes as well, because I didn't understand what was going on around me. And a lot of young people do that, Bernard. As you know, they lash out at the system and they lash out at their parents because they don't understand those changes there. And so they act in a negative manner, and then they get into the drugs and they smoke the cigarettes and they get into crime with their friends, and they think that they're rebelling against the system when they're actually playing into the system's hands, because that's what the system does. Yeah, it eats that. So doing what you're doing and what we're doing now is actually rebelling against the system, you know, growing your own food, being independent and an independent person. And researching is truly what they don't like, but this hidden force seems to be right through our life. And you did a great talk on called Love Bite as well, about this interference on human love relationships. I've talked to Janice Barcello about that, about the pornographic industry. This is an attack on our mind. The food, it seems. I don't want to be negative, I'm just being honest about it, that it just seems with the vaccinations and the food and whatever they're putting in our atmosphere, the TV and the pornography and this constant fear through wars and the threat of war, 9/11, you know, the Vietnam War, the World War One and Two, all this stuff, you know, the banking and everything we talk about. There's a lot of manipulation going on in all of this. But it's all really, for me, I see it all as fear, and I've been thinking that lately, that all these wars and a constant threat of war really keeps the human population in fear. And that applies to me, that something is feeding on us, and people tell me no, they're just basically, psychopathic men in suits who are controlling the planet through the monetary system, you know, debt money-based system, you know. But I've always thought that there's something else behind the mirror of time or the mask of time, that is manipulating us on a deeper level, and we need to be in that sort of fear state for them to sort of get their fingers into us, you know. But talk about this this a little bit. These interferences yeah. and these creatures. What are we looking at here? What could they be? In fact,
well, what you just said towards the end, you know, all this so-called psychopaths, the bankers, or even Illuminati and the hidden government, they themselves are just puppets.
Puppets of it. Yep.
Puppets of it. They are basically fully interfered or possessed by these hyperdimensional beings who are using them to carry out their agenda.
Are they knowingly possessed, or maybe
on some level, you know, could be, you know, but I feel most of them are just empty shells who are just fully driven by hyperdimensional negative entities. And when people just focus on the 3D aspect of Matrix and trying to, you know, it's just focusing like on the shadows on the wall. Like in Plato's allegory of the cave, it's just a symptom. It will never go away, so to speak. And in fact, you know, on some level, these from the hyperdimensional perspective, these entities want that people project all the hate onto them, and trigger a violent revolution. Because again, it's about frequency. They feed off of that frequency, right? They want that. So it's a whole divide and conquer technique, and. But in regards to the hidden forces, what you mentioned earlier as well, it definitely ties into the UFO phenomenon. And when I first started researching it, maybe what 15 years ago, you know, I got into the usual nuts and bolts UFO stuff and disclosure things in Area 51 and Greys and reptilians and crash retrievals and all of that. But you know, similar as what you said, it just didn't add up. And digging a bit deeper and having come across the research of John Keel, who wrote a book, Operation Trojan Horse, or Dr. Jacques Vallée, who wrote a book, Messages of Deception, it all ties into really a paranormal, interdimensional, hyperdimensional phenomenon, and that these entities are shapeshifters. They can appear in any way they want, and even these so-called UFOs or spaceships are not nuts and bolts spaceships coming from other planets, you know, and are not actually 3D in nature, but also are projections from the hyperdimensional dimension, so to speak, and exist and have existed within our world for thousands and thousands of years, but has been interpreted by various cultures, like, as you mentioned, Australian Aboriginals or others, in different ways, right? You look into some other esoteric teachings or the Gnostics, they call them the Archons. In Arabian mythology, they call them the jinn. You have Castaneda's teachings talking about the predator, or Sri Aurobindo called them the hidden forces of life. And, you know, as you mentioned before as well, then people kind of get very focused on the different races and what is this, you know, race and this red. And there, you know, there's some truth to it. I have worked with abductees who are definitely gray alien experiences and reptilian experiences. But personally, I've gone away from all the trying to identify what kind of, you know, how does the entity look like and whatnot, because it can be very deceptive.
Because that may be how they're showing themselves to people.
They're shapeshifters, and they also adjust actually to the belief system of the person. Also, kind of, you know.
Well, that ties up with Hollywood, doesn't it? Because, I mean, ever since movies were pretty much invented, we've been shown these monsters.
Exactly.
And extraterrestrial movies, and that's what we think. You know, you look at Star Wars and we think space is filled with all these bizarre creatures. I mean, they're showing us in the movies. It's so deep.
Yeah, that's
what people may be seeing.
Yeah, and that's absolutely. And
it's
that's
very manipulative, isn't it? And cunning.
It's very like the whole Hollywood movie idea, like Star Trek, Star Wars. And then people, when they get into UFO phenomena, then they have this romantic idea of based off Hollywood conditioning of these films. And don't get me wrong, I love Star Wars. I grew up on it, you know. But that is not how the UFO phenomena works, or what is it all about at all, right? It's really a hyperdimensional, non-physical phenomena that has existed throughout thousands of years and adjusted itself to also the belief system of the collective. And now it's maybe being interpreted more in terms of UFO and high tech, because we are more in the high tech modern civilization, right? Back in the days, it was more demons and fairies and, you know, all kinds of other interpretations of the phenomena based on the zeitgeist of that culture at that time. So that's really what it comes down to. But, you know, I've gotten lately into the work of Sri Aurobindo, which I've quoted a lot in that essay you mentioned about timeline, reality split, and the hidden forces of life, right? So I just mentioned them as well, hyperdimensional beings, occult forces and whatnot. And they are, yeah, vast different levels. You know, there can be more high level demonic reptilian draconian entities, or more like the slave drones like Grays and whatnot. But sometimes they're even just little critters like parasites. And, you know, I see no more different in our physical body when we are interfered with parasites, bacteria, viruses, whatnot, which our immune system is constantly fighting off on a daily basis. We are not even aware of it. So all of us are subjected to hyperdimensional forces and critters to varying degrees all the time. So we need to, because they really like, when, you know, it's, they're not even, even the whole idea of evil, they're even not quote unquote evil. It's just they feed off of us and lock into us, not any different than we need to feed ourselves with plants or animals, whatever. It really doesn't matter at all what diet you're on. So that's, we're just not on top of the food chain. And just as we need to build our physical immune system to fight off viruses and parasites, we need to also build up our spiritual immune system to anchor a higher frequencies so we do not become subjected to these interdimensional interferences. And these interferences can happen to various degrees. I mean, I've worked with clients who are just dealing with, you know, subtle entity interference in terms of thought projections and behavior manipulation and emotional manipulation, up to like full-on possession. You know, like a few months ago, I was working with my Peruvian friend, whom I'm doing retreats with, with a case of this guy who has been in Iquitos in Peru. Mm-hmm. At an ayahuasca ceremony, he came back home with a full-on entity possession, right? And we worked with him like for almost a month, trying via Skype at first, you know, because he's from Canada. And the entity was taking him over. You could clearly see it. It was like clear as day and night. And it was really, you know, we tried the best to get him back into his body and really like gave him some affirmation, something to work with so he stays grounded. But in the end, you know, there's only so much you can do via Skype. And with my Peruvian friend, we helped him to, he needed to go back to the jungle and actually work with a real shaman, go back in the jungle for a whole month and undergo an exorcism, basically.
Did the entity attach itself to him while he was on ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca, which is a whole other topic. I wrote about this as well. This is a whole danger about medicine plants, especially ayahuasca, especially the way it's hyped, and psychedelics as well, because you open yourself up to higher levels of dimensions, and it's a jungle out there, so you can easily come back with an entity attachment. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, if the shaman doesn't know how to hold space, if there's no integrity, or who knows, you know, what's going on, especially since the ayahuasca hype in this day and age and all the ayahuasca tourism, there are a lot of quote unquote shamans or pseudo shamans in Peru all across the world who want to cash in that, you're right? So that particular shaman actually turned out to be a sorcerer and actually, in fact, cursed him and installed that entity in this guy. And that's what a lot of shamans slash sorcerers do in Peru, similar to like a doctor would try to keep you sick to come back for more treatments to get more money out of your pocket. So that's what some shamans do in, or let's call them sorcerers, down in South America. They purposely curse, you know, they give you some healing under the illusion that you're healed, but then they kind of tag you with something so you come back for more and more and more. So that's kind of, you know, one example of where people need to be very discerning. And, you know, I work with medicine plants. My friend, my Peruvian friend and me, we work with Huachuma, San Pedro, and we do retreats down in Peru, but we do it very, very differently. Like most of these ayahuasca medicine plant retreats, it's like there's no preparation, no integration, just like a one ceremony every 2 days and that's it. And, you know, with people you've never met before, and I don't think it's very responsible, right? So for me, again, I don't want to throw the baby with the bathwater. I feel there's a lot of healing can happen by consciously using these plants.
Psychedelics,
but there needs to be proper preparation.
Absolutely, yeah. I've always thought that there should be actual clinics, like really strictly controlled clinics where people can go and use these these plant substances to heal, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always going to be places like Peru where they're going to just cash in a little bit. And as you said, yeah, you're not going to know who you're going to get there. And they're just going to pump them through, the tourists, you know. So that can be a highly dangerous thing as well, especially when people don't understand the plant or the experience they're going to get, you know.
Yeah.
I've been to South America many times and lived there for a while, and it wasn't something I was ready to do, prepared to do there at all, you know. But definitely you're right there, yeah, yeah. It's a shame that's happening, though, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, I see this is just, it ties into everything together in the times we're in, which I call the time of transition, right? There's, on some level, an awakening happening. Not everybody's here to awaken, but more and more people are awakening. And as the light is coming more up, the darkness is also increasing, or the interferences of these hyperdimensional, because they don't want to lose their food source or their investment. So, you know, that's another thing. You know, anybody who's sincerely engaged in the process of awakening will be interfered with, right? It's not because they don't want you to awaken up, they don't want to lose their investment. So it's not like the smooth, like, love and light process you see in the New Age. Really, it's about battling with demons within and without, and you really have to do a lot of shadow work and really work through your shit and deal with these interferences and whatnot, which may happen to varying degrees, to really anchor, to build that soul, your soul vehicle, and anchor a higher frequency, so you come to a place where you're not really that subjected to these interferences. You know, and you see it in ancient esoteric teachings. They talk about crossing that threshold, you know, like you have to really cross the threshold to that higher level. And most people, you know, dream of being awake and haven't really crossed the threshold yet, but, you know, engage in spiritual bypassing and whatnot, or mistake emotional projections as an awakened state, and all of that. So it is serious work, and plant medicine can assist in the process, but it's more important what you do it when you're off of them, right? And also, again, like you said before, be very, very discerning what yourself get into and who you do it with, right?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's definitely, well, as I said, yeah, I was very much into that. I would say started to get very much into it in the early 90s, and you know, through great magazines like Nexus. We have Nexus magazine in Australia, and New Dawn. They're very good, similar to your work. Surprised your articles aren't in Nexus or New Dawn. We'll have to send them in to them, because they
actually Duncan
and M. Rhodes. Yeah, does Nexus?
Yeah, he actually wrote me a message or email. I can't remember if it was Facebook email. Was it a year ago or something? Yeah. He asked about if he can publish some of my work.
They do the conference, Nexus conference as well, each year around Australia. It's very popular. Guests come from around the world and do their talks over the days. Yeah.
So yeah, he sent me, and I told him, yeah, feel free. But then I haven't heard back from him, so I don't know what happened.
I'll pop it through to him. It's those guys. They have a big website they've just built, sort of like a 24/7 news feed. I'll pull that through to you as well. It's very interesting. But I was looking the other day about, well, you know, we call this demons, or the devil is a name for it. I guess Christians and other people who are religious people call this entity the devil, which could be, it's just a name, but another disguise, because the devil we know is a trickster. But I'm looking at this devil in the detail, or the technology. Do you think that that these hyperdimensional entities are in technology? Is this a way to get us as well?
Yeah,
yes. I feel like this devil is in the technology, and it's a modern way to attack us at our very core as well.
Absolutely,
it's not something people would think about.
Because that's how the conditioning works as well. I mean, that ties into AI, artificial intelligence, which we're moving to.
That's
more
what
and
they're
more.
Moving to, isn't it? Yeah.
And you saw, you know, I mentioned in my article of the timeline reality split, for example, the Pokemon hype. That's tense. I mean, just the way, like, it's like walking, it's like the zombie apocalypse. You know, the main thing with technology, I mean, again, it's good and bad, whatever. It's really, it's a tool. It's how you use it. You know, the good thing about the internet, like now with Skyping, we're connecting and spreading information. But, you know, you have to check yourself because it keeps you in your head. And that's what they want. They want to keep technology is external, right? It makes you very head-centric. It disconnects you from your body. It disconnects you from your own body intelligence, your inner body technology, which we've been removed from even through genetic manipulation or from our original blueprint. Right? So that's really, you know, we look, even if we look into ancient history, I'm not talking about the official history, which is a complete lie and distortion, but you look into ancient history, ancient civilizations, and, you know, especially the stone monolithic cultures, you know, which we still don't know how they build these structures. Of course, you know, official quote-unquote science and history gives us all kinds of explanation which don't add up. But what seems more likely that, you know, ancient civilizations, these people were actually on a higher level of being conscious than we are. But we see them as primitive because we think, oh, they had no technology, external technology. But they were really tapped into their own bodily inner technology and even able to manipulate physical reality to an extent and all of that and accessing higher states of consciousness in which they were able to have more powers and control over physical reality, so to speak, right? And now we are being, with all this technology, we're being removed more and more from our embodiment, embodied presence from our own bodies. And
we're becoming, again, like, aren't we?
Exactly. And then, like you said as well, you know, if you really head-centric, live in your head, you're disconnected from your body, you stare at the screen all the time, that opens up pathways for hyperdimensional forces to come in because you're not really grounded in your body, right? It's like people are Trojan horses, carriers of entities. And, you know, even like through the whole EMF radiation, yes, you know, be it cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi radiation and all of that, it not only does it hurt us on an energetic level, but they are literally like highways, pathways for hyperdimensional forces to inject with us. Like I personally, I don't have Wi-Fi anymore. I haven't had Wi-Fi for a few years and I've felt tremendous changes in the positive way.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so, I mean, for example, like I think I mentioned that in another interview as well. Just a month ago or so, I turned on the Wi-Fi again because I was kind of lazy and I wanted to do some reading and work in my bed, so with my laptop. So I did that, and then I just was tired. I forgot to turn off the Wi-Fi, and I woke up in the middle of the night with nightmares, sweating like crazy. I've become very sensitive, you know, to this radiation. Where I live now, I live out in nature. I don't have cell phone reception here, so that's nice. Actually, and I don't have Wi-Fi, just the Ethernet, and then I don't really have any intermediate close neighbors, so I'm not subjected really to any of that radiation, and I feel it. I become more sensitive. So when I go back down to the city, LA, I feel the, you know, that frequency is almost, it's very, you know, kind of heavy. I can sense it, not only from the technology, but also people living very close, you know, to each other. So that's kind of, it's kind of ironic because a lot of the people, especially health conscious people, talk about non-GMOs and eat clean food and organic stuff. But everybody, you know, is walking around with their cell phones and has Wi-Fi at home, right? So
that's right.
It is kind of ironic.
Yeah, we always say that the mums are out there buying organic diapers and organic food and organic this and little bottles and asking about the BPA and other plastic substances in the bottles, and they care for their babies and they take them down and get all these vaccines jabbed into them.
Exactly.
It's an amazing system. I did have a little while ago Arno Pienaar, who you may have heard of. He's in South Africa. He does some great work like yourself over at Dreamcatcher Reality, and he's got his own site. He did an article called Aluminium and the Slave Race of the Matrix, which was really interesting as well, about this technology and the aluminium, how it's just all over the planet and all through our day-to-day lives and our food, even in the baby formulas and everywhere, and how this can be a sort of a receiver of information as well. And that ties up with what you just said. These frequencies, if we have this metal in our body so much, you know, and we look at the chemtrails and HAARP and all of this, whether it's real or not, but if aluminium receives information technology and we look at these motes or nano dust, the military have been working on. And he talked about it being a byproduct, especially in soy products and you know, and chocolates and everything we buy has this aluminium in it. It's almost, you know, an interface, if you will, has been set up in us. It's like where this stuff's able to, he seems to think that they can put these, frequencies and thoughts in our minds, you know, and steer us to how they want us to think. And that's a really frightening sort of thing. And you look at remote neural monitoring, and how far they're ahead now, with this technology. I know a lot of people aren't into it, but, it does seem, you know, you wonder about that, you know, how much, and if you are aware of it, can you stop it? You know, it really is a, you know, I know you can do it with your diet and the way you think and try and be healthy and clean, but if this stuff is, on a nano particle size, is going in the atmosphere and going in our crops and water, then, you know, it's going in us, and it's, you know, it makes the brain so easy to manage, as well. And, you know, maybe, Bernard, that's what all the zombie movies are about, you know, human beings. You know, because I saw this Pokemon thing and I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. We talked about it before here. I'm just horrified seeing. I actually saw them the other day. These teenagers with their necks bent over, their shoulders slouched, with their thumbs and their phone, and they're staring into this phone, walking up the side of a road. I'm just like, what the hell? And you can go over and clap your hands in their face, and they don't look at you. And they're trying to find these damn Pokemon. This guy, my God.
Yeah, and hear other people saying, well, at least they're getting some exercise. And like, no, this is not exercise. You're completely not in touch with your body at all.
They're making that up. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, yeah, it's intense. I was really, when I first saw it, I was like, whoa, this is the zombie apocalypse people have been talking about.
It could be what it is. And it's also, I was just reading a paper on technology. It was a professor, Bruce Kirk, and he was talking about it, and he's saying just the general, like you were talking about our inner emotions and the way we're naturally meant to be. And these come back to you if you spend any time in the woods or out in the natural world, you know, just camping or, you know, just with your basic stuff and away from all of this, but we're losing those survival skills, aren't we? And we're losing our empathy and our will to survive. It's just so many people just slouch in the couch and they just shrug their shoulders at what's going on. Well, it doesn't affect me. I don't care. But he's talking about the body language, the tone of our voices. We're losing it all. We're losing our writing, the way we interact with people. And that's coming through pornography as well. And it's all being taken over online. And I see this now. I can't even hardly get a lot of people to comment on articles that you put up because now they just put those little emoji things on Facebook. It's a heart or a smile.
Yeah, and even like, let alone the ever-diminishing attention span.
Yeah, they don't even say, yeah, I like this article. Here's another link. What do you reckon? You want to catch up? It's just, they just press a button now and it puts an emotion there, which isn't even theirs. And of course, kids are losing the language. And we've talked about this as well. Like if you look at the old newspapers in the old days, how beautiful they were written and the words they used in the English language. And you just think, you know, and the phones now are all spell correcting for us. And
That's so annoying, by the way.
It's amazing. It's going to get to the point where we just don't even talk anymore.
Yeah.
And of course, as I said, the pornography is attacking, you know, is attacking that that sexual part of us, that sexual energy, which is so very powerful, and that chemical spark that a man and a woman has, that's been smashed to pieces, and men and young boys now they cannot communicate in a loving relationship anymore if it's not pornographically based, and the women don't do what the girls do in the pornographic movies; they're not interested, and they're becoming almost sociopathic. And these are 10-year-old boys, 15-year-old boys.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. The conditioning starts young now.
It does, very young. There was just an article in our local papers the other day where they've busted these child pornographic rings. And they say it's, you know, 70 countries and they've busted all these schools in Australia. And they've found these teenage boys who are shifting around this child pornography. and they're schoolboys, and they're just so detached now that it doesn't mean anything. And I think there's a guy in the UK about to release a documentary he did on it called Porn on the Brain. And he was asking these young boys, and they're talking about bestiality and anal sex and all this stuff that they see in the pornos. And he was saying, my God, you know, like, you know, you're 10, you're 15 years old, and they expect anal sex and blowjobs off a girl on a first date. And these poor girls in school are expected to live up to that. And if they don't, they attack them on social media. And of course, some of these girls take their own lives. This is what's happening. And these boys were telling him they were getting this off Facebook. And I've been getting that as well. Their Facebook, these ads have been popping off for pornography and up as that. And I guess these boys, they click on it and then they go into that web. And it's interesting because Facebook just blocked me again for putting up a basic article the other week. That's 5 times now. I got blocked for 3 days and it told me they were blocking me for, violating Facebook's community standards.
Yeah.
It's like, give me a break, you know? But amazing. Bernard, I guess my, where I'm going with this is how easy, kids now can access that. Just go on a keyboard or their phone or tablet and just click once or twice and get access to this demonic material, really. That's what it is. And you know, it's scary where we're going as well. And I have to look at it on all sides as well. But it makes my job doing this a little bit hard on me emotionally.
Right. You are a father, right? You are a dad.
Yeah, yes, you know. And I'll do whatever I can to protect my child from this. And I already have done that, especially at a medical level. Things like ultrasounds and the jabs and all this medical intervention. They're constantly trying to get their hands into your child. I noticed that, you know. I had to have fights with doctors, actual fist fights almost. I was going to punch these guys. You know, leave me alone. That's what I kept saying. Just let my wife have the baby naturally and leave us alone. We don't want your interference. You know, and I've always stuck up for doctors and surgeons because we do need them at a certain level. You know, we they do some amazing work, but there's no balance anymore.
And then they are heavily conditioned.
Conditioned, and it's just push drugs. I mean, in Australia, Bernard, you know, we have terrible vaccination laws now, which so many of us are trying to fight. Yeah, they've stripped away parents' benefits, you know, and really their dignity, and they're treating children like lepers now almost. It's really staggering what's happening, and we've got this whole push for it, which is clearly an agenda from big pharmaceutical industry, you know, in so many ways. And the politicians are involved, the media are involved, and they don't have any shame or morals about doing so, you know. And we're trying to get back our health freedoms. But now, I said this years ago, following this, that they're going to go after natural medicine and even vitamins, and that's what they've done now. They're bringing in laws into our parliament now, which is a direct attack against natural therapists, practitioners, homeopathy, you know, naturopaths, herbs, even yoga, as I said, all these things, for our ability to access them. And now they're attacking vitamins through the media as well. It's quite amazing that that's happening in Australia, you know?
No, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you saw it on my blog. I was in Australia earlier this year in April. I was invited to speak at a festival called the Maitreya Festival, and close somewhere north in Melbourne. And when I got there, but it got shut down because they didn't get the quote-unquote permit. They got into some fight with the local council. Like, I don't even – there's a whole sub-government down there. Like, I had a crash course in the whole military – in not military, in the you know, police –
belly of the beast
of Australia.
It's the belly of the beast.
Yeah,
you know, and our media is controlled by Rupert Murdoch. You know, our current prime minister and his wife have direct shares in pharmaceutical industry. Rupert Murdoch, his son, sat on the board of the pharmaceutical industry. GlaxoSmithKline, you know. All our papers, there's all this double standard. And to say it's bias is ridiculous. And it's the families that are losing out. Because now, for example, Bernard, just for a quick example, you have a little baby that contracted whooping cough the other day. And the World Health Organization, the CDC, it's all over the world. Everybody knows that the pertussis vaccine has failed. And children who get injected with a pertussis vaccine, it wanes after a short time, maybe a couple of years if that. It doesn't offer hardly any protection, but they become reservoirs or carriers of it, and they spread it around to other children. Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. So a baby got pertussis off her vaccinated brother, who got it off a vaccinated child at a childcare where all the kids were vaccinated, but the media blamed less than 5% of unvaccinated children in Australia. And so when this happens, the draconian laws get more vicious and you lose more of your health freedoms and rights. And now the media here are calling parents who don't want to vaccinate their kids child abusers and killers and murderers and all of this. And it's getting that bad here. And now, as I said, I'm seeing an open attack against homeopaths.
It's kind of ironic, by the way, just to inject, like, even from a basic logical perspective. You know, if you believe in vaccination, you have your child vaccinated. Why are you afraid of children who are not vaccinated?
Because it's crazy, isn't it?
Based on the logic you just bought into, your child should be protected.
That's the spin that the media... It's just, I've said to people, the reason that they're buying it is because it's simply on the TV. Yeah. That's all they need to do. They just put it on the news or in the papers, and the people read it and they swallow it, hook, line, and sinker. And they don't question this reality, you know, that's spoon-fed to them their whole lives. They don't step outside and say, hang on, what's going on here? Your kids are fully vaccinated, but you're worried about an unvaccinated child making them sick. That means vaccines don't work, right? Well, they don't want to answer you. But, you know, my family I use homeopathy because it works well. And so I chose homeoprophylaxis for our little one. And, and I use it for myself. But this attack on homeopaths is quite dreadful. When I first saw a homeopath, I was in there for nearly 2 hours. Even talking about things that nightmares and things that I had when I was little, and they really get to know you on a deep level before, and so they prescribe medicine for who you are. It's not like just spitting out antibiotics like doctors do now. Yeah. They don't even look at you now. You go in there with a flu symptoms, which could be anything. Yeah, and they just give you antibiotics. Whereas natural medicine, as you know too well, it's a whole life and body thing. You know, it's not just your diet and the way you think and see things. It's a whole spiritual level.
Like, for example, just in my body work practice, when people come for me to get some body work and they have body pain here and there, and work on them, and I'm very intuitive, and I also do energy work, and I'm pretty good at reading people. And then, after this, we have a little, talk and session and coaching session, and I go into all of that. It's like, okay, like, you can come to me every week and work on the symptoms, and it will make you feel better, but all what you feel in your body when you feel pain, muscle tension, that is a manifestation of something else, because the body is the mind, and most often it relates to suppressed emotions, even suppressed trauma, lifestyle habits, your thought patterns or whatever, behavior patterns. So you need to look at your whole life and make adjustment, which will then be reflected in your life. Or even with diet, some people thrive on a certain diet better than others. So it's a very, like I said before, a very individual thing. Same what you just alluded to with your homeopathy, right? So it's really like addressing the individual, and what works for one may not work for another, and that's really what it comes down to. But in our culture and society, you see in education as well, it's like one shoe fits all, when in fact it doesn't.
That's exactly right. Yeah. If you don't think like the herd, they exclude you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. I've studied herbs and medicine for a long time now, and I use things that work for me, that I like, things like ascorbic acid, these types of things. I buy them, I take them, certain herbal teas, they work for me, but they may not work for everybody else. Exactly. Other people are different. They have different constitution, absolutely, different digestive systems, different mentalities, different ways they see everything. So this is what we're missing here. That's exactly right, what you said. It's a one-size-fits-all thing. That's what that's all about now. Fit this glove or don't fit at all.
It's really the disease of homogenization of humanity, and that ties into the new world order and even world government, to like make everyone the same, right? Everybody believe the same, and
hive mind,
and it's a war on the individual, basically. Hive mind, exactly.
Yeah, War on the Mind. Yeah, that's right. So we're working as positively and as hard as we can. And we're making great movement here. We really are. We're getting lawyers involved and, nice. We've been under attack by this whole, I guess they're just, as you know, trolls online, and we've found out that a lot of them are coming from call centres. They're just set up by the pharmaceutical industry to scare everybody. So once people know that and there's nothing to fear, there's so many people getting on board now because they're seeing that attack on their health freedoms. It's not just about being forcibly vaccinated. It's a whole thing here. So a lot of good people coming on board, and we're making massive massive progress because of social media as well. I noted when I first went on social media, everyone was on there talking about everything they do every day, showing all their friends I'm doing this. But now it's become like a 24-hour news feed. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, I have a great network on Facebook. I mean, I get a lot of my news. I learn a lot from my friends and followers on Facebook who post great stuff, and then there are always people who most post about themselves, what they wear, what they eat, whatever, where they are, and then I'll delete them because I'm not interested.
Yeah, it's right.
No offense, it's again, like you said, like technology or Facebook, it's a tool. It's about how you use it. At the same time, I also see how this whole Facebook thing on social media definitely increased narcissism in some people.
Oh, my God. It's really unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's. I've witnessed some things I just can't believe. But I tried to just walk straight through it now and focus on the positive. That's what we're trying to do. Yeah. And I tell people, don't battle with them. Don't argue with them. That's what they want.
I mean, I learned that the hard way too. Yeah, I used to myself because I can be like, I don't shy away from confrontation.
Fiery. Yeah, that's what they want though.
I have my fire, but then it's like, no, this is a waste of time and energy. I'm completely ignoring it. Even like, because of my work, I get my share of quote unquote attacks or trolls. And, I'm choosing my battles wisely. I'm like not even engaging in it. I'm like, okay, this was ridiculous. I'm just going to delete you. And
yeah,
then,
some
people claim me, oh, you're censoring. I'm like, get
that's
out.
That's what they say. Like,
whatever. It's not a public forum. It's my private personal Facebook page. I can do whatever the hell I want to do.
Yeah. They'll just drain your life away on me.
Exactly.
And then when you block them, say, he lost the debate. He doesn't want to debate.
Yeah, whatever. I've had that too. I'm just like, whatever, man. Like, I'm not feeding into that.
We get it bad. I mean, so bad that we've had, like, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, for example. She's an American physician against vaccines. She was supposed to come here to do some talks. They all got cancelled. The troll attacks were so bad, the FBI got involved, threats to kill her. That's what we're putting up with here. And then, people thought they're just dealing with these crazy trolls who want to push vaccines, but they're not. They're groups. They could even be government groups, and that's what they do for a living. So they don't care either way. So there's no use getting upset with these people. But we've actually got doctors right now waiting to debate. Government people, health officials, health department people. We've been trying for 2 years. Anyone you can think of, we've got a doctor right now to debate over the over vaccine science. And none of them will. And so we put that debate challenge up and that generally shuts them up. And none of them will debate over it. Not one of them. We haven't had any luck. So there you go. They won't debate Dr. Rima Labo. Dr. Rima will eat them alive. She's got like 43 years experience in this, and she's a world-leading researcher in vaccine, true vaccine science, and what's really going on there. And so,
in general, I'm also actually pretty positive and optimistic. I see definitely a rising of awareness and a certain level of awakening, happening, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. That's what
I always say. Things are going to get ugly, but they have to in order to get better.
Right.
And I think people.
But that ties into like the deeper topic, what I talked about, the timeline reality split, because I don't think there's any collective awakening happening, but more, like you said before, people will move out of our lives and we attract other people. And it all depends on your level of embodiment, your frequency and vibration and level of being. Right, in terms of your awareness and your self-work and all of that, and that will kind of attract more, that's for me the true meaning of the law of attraction, which has not much to do with just thinking positive thoughts or anything like that.
That's right.
You know, but it's really of your embodied frequency, and that really ties into your own level of sincere self-work and awareness of what's happening on the bigger picture perspective. And again, that's also very different for each. That's why personally I don't believe in competition or comparing myself. You know what I mean? I do what I do, and I think everybody, if you truly tune in to your higher self, so to speak, your unique spark. Everybody has unique gifts and talents that are different for each, and which he or she can provide and even make a living out with, you know, like your vocation. So there's no need for competing or anything like that. That's also that the idea of competition or comparing yourself. That's a whole matrix programming. And it starts in school with the grading system right there, you know?
That's right. Exactly. Yep. They get you early. It's just to change gears here a little bit before we plug out, just on a quick level, we were just discussing before about the death experience and everything. I've had a guy from Texas, Wayne Bush, on a couple of times. Very interesting guy. He has a website called Tricked by the Light, how souls are programmed to go to the moon, sun at death to be recycled as energy, a theory of life and death. How to win the game of life and escape this illusion of matrix. Right. He talks about the Gnostic text, which suggests there was a pre-existent pre-light, like a pure light that we are connected to, but also a counterfeit light that was created in error that we live in this impure counterfeit light. Now, I've heard about this soul net and these types of things, how people see a light and they go to the light. Are they being recycled for food? Is this happening? What's your sort of theory before we plug out on that?
I've heard about this before as well, what you just talked about.
It's pretty common, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. But here's the thing I have to say about that. You know, there's people who, like, oh my God, the whole reincarnation is
a trick.
Death cycle is a track. Don't go to that light. Da, da, da. Yeah. I mean, just even from a basic common sense perspective, it's, excuse me, ridiculous to anticipate what is going to happen to you after you die. You cannot possibly imagine that state of being. You know what I mean? Like, all you can do is, in the present moment, work the best you can on your own embodiment process, on your soul integration process to really integrate the individualized soul within you. You know, engage in the work we need to do, and then at the time of transition, whenever you die, whatever, then this, if you're fully anchored in the divine presence, your soul knows where to go. You know, so there's no need for paranoia, intellectualizing these things, because I feel you cannot possibly, the mind cannot understand what's really happening after death. You can make up theories and whatnot, but you know, I see a lot of people then, you know, like, I mean, again, how can you like intellectually decide or whatever when you die, like, oh, I'm going left or right, whatever, to whatever light. You know, I feel it's like it happens more like it really based on your own level of awareness and being and embodiment process. And I mean, you actually study ancient texts, especially, for example, the Egyptian Book of Dead.
Tibetan as well, yeah.
Tibetan as well. What, you know, all these esoteric teachings, even Gurdjieff talked about what their work was actually all about, is to prepare the soul for death, so the soul knows where to go. So a lot of these ancient teaching was actually a preparation for death, because they understood that this lifespan we're in is very small in light of our eternal nature. You know, so these are just lessons to be learned to really access a higher level, and you know, then after death, the more you've integrated, the easier your transition is to wherever you really need to go next on a soul level.
So for your study, there is that afterlife experience. You know, I guess just to help people who are atheist in attitude or scared of death, you know, I've spoken a lot about that. You know, they fear it so much. I've had some guests on about near-death experiences and all of this. Barry Eaton, a great guy, wrote the Afterlife book. In your research there, it does seem that I'm thinking that the death experience is more connected to our sleeping experience. Maybe when we sleep and we dream, that's more real than this is now. I don't know, but there seems to be this whole afterlife experience that's sort of like this, maybe, but we're not in a body form, we're consciousness. And I'm wondering, in this afterlife experience, as you said, people may have all sorts of different experiences.
It's true. I mean, I haven't really studied in depth afterlife experiences and whatnot, you know, and like near death. I mean, that's a little bit of near death experiences, you know, it ties into like DMT and psychedelic states where you as can kind of, you know, get close to that state, so to speak. But I also feel sometimes, and this is just my personal opinion, might be wrong, these afterlife experiences are highly subjective depending on the person who's experiencing it, you know. And there may be common themes, various, you know, other people have experienced that. But again, it really comes down where you are at in your own soul development or in regards to what you're experiencing personally.
You mean their experiences in the afterlife would be similar to their life experience that they just had, so that they would carry that memory over?
Like, I think beliefs in what you play a strong role. I mean, that ties into earthbound spirits. Dr. William Baldwin has done incredible work. He wrote a great book and actually a therapy book called Spirit Release Therapy, where he talked about earthbound spirits of people who die, but they are so locked in their own earthly experience and belief system, they don't transition at all. They're caught in between, kind of.
Oh, like so
grounded. And then they attach themselves to other humans to still, because they can't let go.
Ghosts.
Right? Kind of quote-unquote ghosts, but then they attach themselves to other beings and live through them. So that's another form of entity attachment. Some entity attachments are actually a diseased people. Their essence kind of latches on other people.
Yeah, that was in the Tibetan Book of the Dead as well. Yeah, those entities
for
that
example,
are so grounded, yeah.
For example, a lot of soldiers come back from war, Iraq, whatever, and they deal with on a psychological level with PTSD. But in fact, many of them may have actually are possessed or taken on these earthbound spirits of other soldiers that died in the war and just latched on them.
That's right.
Especially when you die in trauma and you kind of like don't know what the hell is going on and you know, and you have, you know, it really depends on your level of being and also your belief system, everything that I feel plays part in the death experience, right? But again, like, I won't know until it's my
it's amazing to think of, isn't it? I mean, it's the strangest thing you could. It's stranger than any movie or anything you could see that you have this consciousness that goes on after your body.
It comes down to the death, right?
And we don't really die, do we?
And it's interesting that, you know, still like nobody can avoid death, but everybody's afraid of death, and there's no really. You know, especially in the mainstream, no discussion about death. It's always horrible. It's the end of things and whatnot. And, of course, violent death and murder and all wars is horrible. But, you know, it's really like us understanding because it ties into fear. You know, a lot of people live their lives in fear and are afraid and be it programmed, conditioned, all this fear frequency. But you have to realize that any fear you have or we have is ultimately based on the fear of death. Right.
That's right.
So it's really like also confronting death, contemplating on death, not in a morbid fascination, but, you know, like Krishnamurti said, dying every day, you know, or Don Juan, it's good to have, from Castaneda, he said, always have death on your left shoulder. Be aware of it. Your time could come any time, not in terms of being paranoid and fearful, but it just, you know, like Don Juan said, it develops that sobriety, that focus, that impeccability of the warrior, right? That death could come any time and really working with coming clean with your life. You know, a lot of people regret a lot of things when they're in the deathbed. You know what I mean? How your relations, you have any regrets, you know, whatever you've done in your life, right? And all these kind of things, kind of what Don Juan named recapitulation, right? To really be at peace with yourself, right? To, you know, be able to let go when the moment comes. And you learn that by letting go every day in terms of attachments.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it is an amazing thing. I guess that's why psychedelics can be so powerful. Even smoking
very
marijuana,
important.
People have a smoke of marijuana and they get paranoid because it's that death thing again.
Yeah, because I noticed with people with whatever, be it meth pod or
it'll bring
psychedelics,
it up.
You know, like people have a hard time working with these medicines are people who have control issues who need to stay in control.
Yeah, yeah. Or paranoia as well, yeah.
Yeah,
it can be very scary. for them. Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah. No, I've done a lot of shows on it. I'm very interested. People might call me negative, but I am I'm very interested in the human experience and the death as well. Try to read up on it and talk to people about it. I think it's very important, you know. And it's so bad sometimes in Western countries where families don't even want their kids to go and see their elderly relatives in nursing homes because they see it as being negative because that person's old. It's really terrible, you know.
Right. Oh, and there's no conscious, like really like letting people consciously die, you know. There's always this idea like, oh, the longer you live, the better, you know, for you, and let's put them on tubes. And
interference. Like, yeah, heads in jars, floating in jars, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know, but it's great to talk about and talk about different things and in regards to that anyway. There's so much interesting information, but yeah, that was really great talking with you today, and hopefully we can do it again sometime soon, because you're always with your type of work, it's constantly progressing, and you're getting so much new information in, so it's always good to...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, my work is really just... I share my own experiences in light of bigger topics, and I go along, you know, and just share. I never know what I will come across. I have no idea where my life is going to. You know, right now, what I do focus and enjoy is working with people one-on-one. I do the retreats with my Peruvian friend twice a year in the Peruvian jungle, 9-day retreat, where we combine various different practices, Qigong, embodiment practices, hikes in the jungle, dance, and then also do the Huachuma, San Pedro ceremony to really like work on a deeper level, right? Because that's, I feel, where the work is at, beyond intellectual information. But also what I wanted to add, you know, especially as it came to me with the thinking about death and whatnot, it's also about honoring the mystery and the unknown, right? Because the more I feel I realize, the more I realize also I don't know. And, you know, having the humility to really like accept, okay, the mind can only grasp and understand so much, you know, and there's just many things we just do not know and just needs to be honored and cannot be understood.
Embrace it.
Yeah, exactly. Embrace it. Isn't the term gnosis, which from esoteric teaching, gnosis means higher knowledge. But that higher knowledge can only come to you when you have, what Sri Aurobindo said, developed yogic consciousness, which goes beyond the five senses, which you cannot read about or understand via the mind. It just comes, you download it, it comes through a really deep embodied knowing, be it intuition or from your higher self and soul, right? And you cannot necessarily prove that knowledge via your 3D physical scientific means or whatever. So there are different levels of knowledge. Knowledge, and from an esoteric point of view, is not just intellectual knowledge, but it's really that, you know, accessing gnosis, higher knowledge, which the mind itself cannot access. So that's to keep in mind, right? To also embrace the unknown and mystery.
Humans, we fear the unknown, don't we? And I guess if we fear the unknown, then it's never going to present itself to us.
That's right. What people don't know about, they are afraid of, right?
Yeah, and as I said, yeah, if we fear the unknown, then it's not going to present itself to us in the right way or correct manner, because we're in that fear state. So as you said, that's a good idea, yeah, to embrace the unknown and maybe it will become, you know, I think that I think we create our own reality. I really do. So, you know, I think if you believe in all these dark things, you're going to be presented with that, you know, in that way. So it's to positively embrace what you don't understand. And I think that's a good outlook, absolutely. As well, I love South America, Peru, and I went to Ecuador for a long time. Ecuador and those countries, Chile and stuff, very, very amazing place. And going back this year again.
Nice.
And
how long is it from Australia?
We got direct flights now, so about 13 hours.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
We have actually two people coming from Australia. No, three people from Australia at our next retreat in
Peru.
November.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Wednesday, do you want to talk about that a bit? Have you still got spaces?
Well, no, that one is actually booked out.
Okay.
We only take 9 people because we could do more. The retreat holds more people, but we want to do quality work and also individual work.
Of course, having
more of the group integrity. Then our next retreat is in May 2017, towards the end of May. We haven't set the dates yet. We have already some interest, but for that retreat, there's already space, and you know, people can check out what we do at our retreat at my website, at theveilofreality.com or at my personal website, bernhardgunther.com.
Okay, I'll get that one up. Yeah, okay. They can go there. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I know those tours are very popular. I spoke with the great scientist Lloyd Pye before he passed away, and they were doing these great tours to Peru and Bolivia. Very popular. Well, I know Lloyd was looking forward to it, and he unfortunately passed, but they were extremely popular tours they were doing there, and I think that's a good idea to do the smaller packages for people, because myself, I wouldn't go on one if it was too many people, but something like you're doing, I would definitely sign up with that, because it's a small group, and then you'll become friends with them, and it's easier to manage.
Exactly, and that's, we also do the medicine journey with San Pedro, like 5 days or 4 days into the retreat, after we have done some deeper work. We do also shadow,
You mean the San Pedro cactus?
The San Pedro cactus.
Oh, they have that in northern Chile, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, we do that at that retreat.
Is that that's a milder psychedelic? Is it like a
different? Yeah, it depends.
I'm not taking that one, but
it can be pretty intense. I mean, it's long.
It needs to be boiled down, doesn't it, and drunk.
Well, we use it. Actually, my friend makes it. He, it's the skin, the thin layer, the outside skin, the dark green skin of the San Pedro cactus, and he dries it and makes a powder of it, and then you can mix it with water, and then you drink it like that. And but it lasts long. It lasts 10 to 12 hours, but it comes in waves and can be pretty intense for some people. Everybody reacts differently. It really depends where you're at. It's like, the medicine has its own intelligence.
That's right.
But we combine it. I do my work. I do energy work and body work on people. We do individual work with everyone. My Peruvian friend, Fred Clark, he's also an amazing sound healer. So he works with ancient Peruvian sounds, during the ceremony as well. So we really do deeper, deeper healing work, And in a beautiful setting, the retreat is amazing. It's on a river in the high jungle. There are waterfalls and
beautiful places there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Gorgeous places. They're amazing. I know in Ecuador and some of those Amazonian regions, those family medicine men, tribes, there's this incredible knowledge of the jungle and the herbs and barks and plants that they have that, is being lost so rapidly as well with industrialization. And as they, log into the forest, these native information is not getting passed down like it used to. Incredible, those medicine men in Ecuador and Peru. And absolutely wonderful place to go for sure.
Incredible. Just as we said before, people need to be discerning who they work with, right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't very common before, and now it's become so popular to go and do the ayahuasca tours. Of course.
I mean, the best shamans I've worked with, they do not advertise on
absolutely.
They don't have a website, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. It's a good thing to do. Yeah, I highly encourage it. I might go myself in the next couple of years if I can go up there. But that's fantastic. Is anything else you want to mention before we
No, I think, again, like you said, people, if they need more information about my work as a writer or what I do working with people or the retreats, they can just go to my websites. And it's all there.
I'll put it up today anyway, and your bio and our website links as well with this. But it's been a great chat with you today. It really has. Yeah. I enjoyed it very much. I think our listeners will like it too.
I appreciate it, Adam. Thanks. Oh. Thanks a lot.
Okay, and we'll...
That was the first time I had a radio show with Australia, by the way.
Okay, so that's great then. That's a first.
Yeah. I love Australia, man. I really was for my first time there in Maine. I love Australians, I mean, I'm from Europe. I like America, but what I like about Australians, they're really more humble and direct, and you know where you're at with them. So I really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's still very much like that here. We haven't lost that Aussie part of us, but I know your work would be very popular in lots of parts of Australia.
Nice.
Especially up the North Coast, Byron Bay area, and these. It's a lot of healing going on in that type of work, similar to what you're doing. It's a great country still, really is. Low population.
You guys have a powerful kind of, the nature, Jesus, man.
Well, you'd love Tasmania and these places. It's very, very wild. Yeah, it's good. In Australia, it's fantastic. You can go any direction and
exactly.
have the coast and the forests and lakes.
Some of my friends, they took me, one of my friends that took me to the Blue Mountains.
Oh, just an hour from Sydney or so?
It's just north of Sydney. Like, it's beautiful, man. Love it there.
Yeah, there's a lot of retreats and yoga retreats happening up there because it's such a special place. It's such a great climate. Yeah, it's really... you get a view of how old the place is, don't you? You know, with the plants and the eucalyptus.
Yes.
When you travel around the world and you come back here, it looks prehistoric.
Exactly. It's like so old. Back dinosaur times.
It does, yeah. Yeah, it's very strange. But, it is amazing, Bernard, when you're looking at Sydney Way and Northern Beaches Way, where I am, you know, they're charging millions of dollars for a house, but up in the Blue Mountains, it's, you know, so cheap to buy a place and live. You know, where you could go by train in to work if you need to, into the city, but a lot of people are doing that. It's a great place to live up there. Yeah, it's really beautiful. Very natural place to be for sure. Ben, maybe we'll get you back sometime.
Sounds good, man.
For a visit. All right, good to chat with you, and we'll keep in touch.
Yeah.
And do it again sometime soon.
Great. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, buddy.
Very much appreciated. Take care.
Okay. Bye.